Okay, I want to explain a medrash from this coming week's Sedra that has many explanations to it, a few of my own in the past that I've given, and this year I'd like to give a new explanation. The medrash says the following. It goes on the verse when Yosef revealed himself to his brothers. He said, Ani Yosef ha'od avi chai. I'm Yosef, is my father still alive? And Torah says, "V'lo yochlu echov lanos also," and his brothers couldn't answer him. Ki nivalu mipanav, because they were astounded in before him. The Medrash says on this the following: Oy lanu miyom hadin, oy lanu miyom hatochacha. They to us from the day of judgment and the day when God will rebuke us. Because if the brothers couldn't stand up to Yosef's rebuke when he said to them, I'm Yosef, is my father still alive? How are we going to be able to stand up when God comes to judge us and rebuke each person according to what he is for the disgrace to the mitzvos and the dereliction in Torah? Elbon ha-mitzvos, the insult, the shame of mitzvos, and the pisha shel Torah, and the being derelict in Torah. Okay. The obvious question here is, where did Yosef rebuke his brothers? All he said is, I'm Yosef, is my father still alive? And how does that connect to the kind of rebuke and judgment that God's going to do in the future that we won't be able to stand up to? That's the question. And again, there are many explanation, the famous Beis Halevi on this medrash, and I personally have about three or four different explanations of this medrash, and I want to offer you a new one that I just thought of this year. Okay. In order to understand, we're going to need a lengthy preface. Yosef, when his brothers came and he recognized them, he could have immediately said, you know, let bygones be bygones and let's bury the hatchet. And the truth is, that's what Yosef would have rather done. As we see that every step along the way, Yosef is crying. He has to turn away and go privately and cry. He's crying so much and it bothers him so much. So why do you have to put your brothers through this? And there's a medrash that says that Yosef really wanted to just forgive his brothers and bury the hatchet, and a malach came and forced him to do what he did. So what's the purpose of it? Why did Yosef put his brothers through this whole ordeal of accusing them of spies, putting them in prison, keeping one in prison, sending them back, putting their money in? So basically the Mefarshim say, and if you want to see an explanation of this in my book, Outlooks and Insights, on last week's Sedra, there's a discussion of this revenge of Yosef, what the purpose was. But bottom line, Yosef wanted to give the brothers a chance to really do tshuva for what they did. Sin was a very serious sin. And one idea is, there's many more, but just to give you a basic idea, one idea of tshuva is, the test of tshuva is, if you get into the same situation again, and you don't commit the sin, then you know that your tshuva is a tshuva. So Yosef tried to recreate a similar situation where a brother is perceived by them to be a threat to them, and instead of selling him or trying to kill him, they put out themselves for him. That's Binyamin. Binyamin now seems to be a threat to all of them. And Yehuda, who was the one who suggested they sell Yosef for the sake of his brother, is also the same mother, right? Not their mother, but their mother that they could feel to them, because Yaakov favors these two children or whatever. Okay. However, with all of that, and therefore all the details of what he put them through was also to give them another kind of tshuva. Tshuva also involves tshuva samishkal. Tshuva samishkal means that if you got enjoyment from the sin, to counteract that and negate it and balance it out, now you have to go through some kind of suffering. So in order to atone for a sin completely, you have to balance out the benefits you got from the sin and negate them. So Yosef tried to put them through everything that they put him through and the benefits they got and balance them out. Okay, again, look in the Sefer and you'll see some details about this. But I want to add another thing that Yosef wanted to show them. Why did the brothers do what they did? Why did they sell him? And they did it because they thought that they were justified. They thought they were not only doing what was right, but what was beyond the call of duty. And the Sfarno says that the brothers considered Yosef a rodef, a pursuer, that he was trying to tell stories about them, to get Yaakov to curse them perhaps, or to totally reject them, like happened to Yishmael and happened to Esau. And he thought that that Yosef was trying to get them out of the picture and usurp everything that was meant for them and take over. And they considered that worse than trying to pursue someone to kill them. Here you're trying to kill them away for eternity. And he was a danger to the emerging Jewish nation. He was a national security issue. So they felt that they had a right to kill him. And if they only sold him as a slave, they did him a favor. But the main thing was they were justified in getting him out of the picture. And because of that, they weren't concerned so much with how they affected Yaakov Avinu, because of what they thought Yosef was trying to do, they saw that Yaakov was going along with it. And they suspected that perhaps Yaakov Avinu is favoring Yosef and in place of them, and taking away from them what's rightfully theirs. And therefore, when he made a special ksonis pasim, special garment for Yosef, they began to be jealous, and they eventually hated him, because they thought that he was trying to vie for Yaakov Avinu's attention and favor on their cheshbon, right? On their, on their account. So that was why they saw everything distorted. They saw that they assumed, or they came to a conclusion, that Yosef was a threat to them, an existential threat, and therefore they had a right to kill him. Surely if only selling him as a slave was going beyond the call of duty. Now the Torah tells us, why did they see everything so distorted and wasn't true? Yosef had no intentions like that, and Yaakov did not favor him on their account. So then, why did they see that? So the Torah tells us because deep down they had a certain jealousy. And when you're jealous, you see things distorted. As it says in Pirkei Avos, Hakina v'hataiva v'hakavod motzina sa'odim et ha'olam. Jealousy and lust and honor take a person out of the world. And there are many ways of understanding that. Which world? This world? The next world? But one of the ways I understand it is it takes you out of reality. And your jealousy makes you see things in a totally distorted way, and you live in a fantasy world that's totally distorted. And everything you see about the person you're jealous of, right, is distorted. So you're no longer in touch with reality. So it takes you out of the real world. That's what it means. And because they were jealous, they ended up having sina. They had a certain amount of hatred. Hatred means that they were distanced. Because ava means a bond. When you don't have a bond, then that is the beginnings of hatred. It doesn't have to mean you hated his guts. It means that there was a distance. And therefore, they weren't able to communicate. And it says, lo yachru dablo l'shalom. They couldn't speak to him peacefully for peace. And since they couldn't speak to him, when you don't speak and communicate, then, and you look at things from afar, and you are motivated by personal bias, inevitably everything becomes distorted, and you feel justified based on the distorted view that you see to take action when really no action is warranted because the situation is completely different than you see it. That was part of the problem. That's why it says when Yosef came to them, when they actually affected the sale, it says as a preface, V'haya terem yikrav aleihem v'yisnaklu aleihem lahamiso. Before he had a chance to get close to them, they already planned to kill him. And I think one of the Mefarshim says, had they let him get close, let's investigate things from close up, Let's see things as they really are. Let's talk it out. Right? Maybe our perception is wrong. Maybe if we investigate this more, maybe if we get a closer look. But they didn't. They saw it all from afar, from that distance, and they assumed what they saw was what was true. They never gave it a chance to really investigate it and get close, and therefore they came to the conclusion they came to, thinking they were totally justified and going beyond the call of duty by selling it. Now, if that's the case, so Yosef had to show them that this is a possibility. It's possible for someone to see things totally distorted, right, and to come to conclusions about it if you don't really investigate. And that's what he put them into, right? He made them see this. They saw this guy is totally off the wall. We came to buy food, innocent. And he all of a sudden makes us spies, and everything we do, right, he's suspicious of, and now he wants us to bring our brother because he's afraid that we're lying or whatever. So what did they see from that? What are they supposed to see from that? You see, they know that they're innocent, and yet this man has created an entire fantasy world of them being spies. So now they're supposed to think, you know what, maybe how we saw Yosef was the same thing. Maybe just the way we're being seen, distorted, maybe it's the way we saw Yosef distorted. That was part of the tshuva process, to let them realize that if you don't investigate something well, and you only look at the surface, you can make a libel, and it's not really true. They know that that's what happened to them, and yet maybe that's what they did to Yosef, by not investigating, not getting close, and not discussing, and by having a bad communication. That's the idea. That's why Yosef, partially why he did what he did to them, to give them the feeling that, you know what, if we see it can happen to us, maybe that's what we did to Yosef. Okay. Now, if that's the case, Yehuda came to the realization that, you know what, something's wrong over here. Why is this guy constantly thinking that everything we do is malicious? We're a bunch of ganavim, we're a bunch of spies, right? So he said, you know, I've come to the conclusion that maybe it's a bad communication. And because of that, we got a distorted perception. So what did Yehuda do? He made a last-ditch effort to say, Vayigash elav Yehuda, let me get closer to you, and let's talk this out, and let me review what went on, and let's see, maybe you'll see it from a different perspective, and see that your perception is totally off because we haven't communicated. That was what Vayigash elav Yehuda. The Zohar says that by coming close, the Melech Yehuda, coming close to the Tzaddik Yosef, brought tremendous good to the world and good to the Shvatim. Why? Because when you're distanced and you see things from a distance, right, then you inevitably see things distorted. You can't, when there's no good communication, close communication, you can distort things completely. And that's why it says, don't judge someone else till you come to their place, meaning till you get close to them. Don't judge them from afar, because there's all kinds of things that can be distorted if you judge things from afar. Throw into that bias and jealousy or whatever, when you're a distance, inevitably there's going to be distortion. The Medrash HaGadol says that Vayigash implies the following things. Vayigash means he came close. He brought himself close. He said to Yosef, look, don't look at me from afar. You're seeing this whole thing distorted. Let's communicate from a close up, and maybe we'll see that the whole thing is only a libel. It's a total fantasy. We're not spies. Binyamin didn't steal your goblet. Okay, but let's see it now. So he brought himself closer to be able to be scrutinized from close, and to be able to have that close communication. Therefore, the Medrash HaGadol says that Vayigash signifies the following things. Shalom, by getting closer, by having a more healthy communication, it comes to shalom, to peace and harmony. Nichumim, it comes to comfort and consolation, things that were where points of contention can be solved, and people can be comforted and consoled from charges and accusations or whatever, and hard feelings that come from those charges and accusations. It's used in regard to karbanos. It's something that brings a person closer. A korban is a means to bring people closer to God, right? Korban itself means to be closer. And bedika, investigation. When you get close, you can investigate things properly and really see them as they are. So all of those things are included in Vayigash Elav Yehuda. Yehuda came to the realization that sometimes things can be decided and viewed and conclusions can be drawn in a totally distorted way if you don't see things properly. And that was supposed to get him to believe that maybe that's what happened with Yosef. But he saw it clearly now. And therefore the Kliyoker says that Yehuda said, Be Adoni, right? Everything depends on me, meaning could be that the reason everything is being distorted here, because I know we're innocent. So why is God permitting you to see this totally distorted view of us and accuse us of being spies and thieves and whatever? He said, probably it's my fault, because we have another sin that we committed, the sin of selling our brother. He's all this, he said to himself. And maybe that's why God is permitting you to see things in such a distorted way. So instead of being smug and self-righteous and saying we don't deserve this, he said, you know what, maybe we do deserve this, and this, then we have to work it out, because there's something that we need to handle and to deal with, right, and to solve, because it's not your fault, Yosef, it's my fault. So part of this idea of good communication is a person being contrite, being submissive, subdued, accepting the fact that maybe I'm the cause of this distortion and not the other side. And therefore, maybe if we'll communicate properly, and maybe if I'll look into myself and see that I shouldn't feel so self-righteous, maybe I'm the cause of this distortion, and that's why Yosef is looking at things the way that he is. Maybe it has to do with something beyond this issue itself. It brings in other issues, because God is involved because of situations that I caused in with other sins. That's, and therefore the Rabbeinu Bachya says that even though Yehuda said Yosef deserves to be yelled at over here, to be dealt with, what are you making this libel against us? But he realized he's not going to get anywhere with that. The best thing is to be submissive and to speak softly, and maybe we can solve the issue. Because if I'll go against him, self-righteousness, right, you are totally distorting the situation over here, I'm not going to get anywhere with that. It's not going to lead to anything. It will lead to a better resolution if it's talk of bad communication, by communicating, by getting closer, by investigating, right, all of those things, by trying to make peace. That's the idea. The Beis HaLevi adds another dimension in this, what we're trying to portray. You can throw in the Beis HaLevi. The Beis HaLevi said, until now, we were speaking through an interpreter. Maybe that's where the problem is. What we say and what he hears are two different things. Because according to everything we said, we don't understand why he made this libel against us. But maybe the interpreter is telling him something else. And so he said, Vayigash Lev Yehuda, let me speak in your ear. Forget about the interpreter. Let's talk heart to heart. So there's no interpreter, so there's no place for misunderstanding. You hear what I say and I hear what you say. Now, the only problem with that is that they thought that Yosef didn't understand what they were saying. So how's it going to help? There's a famous maisa with the Chafetz Chaim that they had to plead to the Polish government against a decree that they made against Judaism. And the Gedolim didn't know Polish. And the government officials didn't know Yiddish. So they brought with them translators and interpreters. And the Chafetz Chaim got up to make an impassioned plea that they should, rescind the decree. It was a terrible decree against Jewish education or whatever. And he made this impassioned plea to this government official who didn't understand a word of Yiddish. And just as the interpreter was ready to say what the Chafetz Chaim said after he finished, the Polish official said, "You don't have to say anything. I don't know every word the rabbi said, but he spoke from his heart, and the rabbis say that things that come from the heart enter on the person's heart." And that's what happened here. And the man said, "I don't have to hear every word. I understand how important this is to this rabbi. We're rescinding the decree." So sometimes you don't have to hear the words. You just have to hear what the person's heart says. And if you can take away the interpreter and get heart to heart, then sometimes the situation will be solved, even without all the details of being ironed out. And that's how, what's it called, Yehuda came, and the brothers, to rethink their libel against Yosef, that if we can be accused wrongly, maybe we accused him wrongly. Maybe the bad communication that resulted in our being libeled was bad communication that resulted in Yosef being libeled. So it was part of the process of getting them to do tshuva. Now, when Yosef revealed himself, so what did he say to them? Right after this, he said, "Ani Yosef achichem asher b'chartem osi." He said, "I'm your brother Yosef, who you sold." But before he said that, he just said, "Ani Yosef ha'od avichai. I'm Yosef, is my father still alive?" So I want to say what he was doing was giving them tremendous mussar. He's saying the following. Till now, you had a picture in your mind of who Yosef was. Yosef is this terrible person who wants to get rid of you, take, usurp your place, right, be the only member of the Jewish people, and all of you should be like Esav and Yishmael, pushed to the side. He's the one who's currying favor with the father, telling stories about you, and for this purpose, and he's got his father now bamboozled that he's, what's it called, has the father's favor, and he's the father's also going along with this. That's what they imagined, and that's what brought them to sell him. So Yosef told them, "I'm Yosef, look at me. I wanted to get rid of you. I had the opportunity now. I'm the second in command over here. I accused you of being spies. I could have had you all shot, hanged. But I didn't. I'm Yosef. Look at me now and see, am I the Yosef you thought that you created, or am I a different Yosef? And if I'm a different Yosef, and I'm not the threat Yosef, the Russia Yosef, the what's it called, the pursuer, right? If I'm not that, then ha'od avichai is your philosophy, your idea that it's my father, not your father. I took him for myself, and I curried favor with him, and he's now going to be my father and not your father. Is that concept still alive in your mind?" That allowed you, they had to have two things that allowed them to sell it. One is that they thought he was a threat to the point where they were allowed to get rid of him, one way or another, and they were going to affect the father. So that means they had to say that Yaakov is part of this too. We can't worry about our father because he's part of this. Yosef has convinced him that he should be his father and forget about us and curse us, push us away like Esav and Yishmael were done. So he said, "Now, in order to sell me, you had to have this distorted view of me and distorted view that our father is going along with this. So now, Ani Yosef, look at me now. Am I the same perception you had before? Or have I proved to you that what you did was totally distorted? And therefore, Ha'od Avichai is that concept that you had that he's my father and not your father, right? Is that still alive in you? Or have you come to the realization that that's not true either? And therefore, what you did to me was wrong and what you did to our father was wrong." That's the Musa. The Mela, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to judge us, each person according to what he is, you know what he's going to say? "You know, you had a lot of distorted perceptions about me in this world and my mitzvahs, right? You didn't like this mitzvah, you didn't like that mitzvah, you thought that I gave this because it harmed you this way, harmed you that way. right? Torah, you didn't like what it said over here, and didn't fit with you, and you choshed me that things I did in the world weren't the proper thing or whatever, and this thing in Torah maybe is not proper, and this one's not proper, and because of that, you insulted many mitzvahs, and you were derelict in Torah. Now, Ani Hashem. Now get a good look at me, who I really am. Not your distorted perception. And therefore, what an insult to the mitzvahs you had, because you misunderstood who I was, what I was, what my intention was, and you created false ideologies, false ideas in how you related to the Torah or rejected the Torah. Ani Yosef, Ani Hashem. Look at me now. Not the way you looked at me in a distorted way before. Now look at me as I really am. And therefore, what's it called? How did you relate to the Torah? How did you relate to the mitzvos? Did you relate to them properly or improperly because of your distorted view of who I am? That's the same mussar that Yosef gave to his brothers. That is... Okay. Now, just to... So that's the meaning of the Medrash. They couldn't stand up to Yosef's rebuke. Where was the rebuke? I'm Yosef. Am I the same Yosef that you saw before? Or is your perception now much different, and you can see now that what you did before was totally distorted because of bad communication, because of jealousy, because of not getting close and seeing the situation from close, heart to heart, but seeing it from afar, from a distance, right, and creating a totally false perception. And because of that false perception, you then decided that our father is an accomplice to all of this, and therefore hurting him is also justified. So your false perception then had a bearing on how you treated our father. You didn't think there was a mitzvah anymore, kibbut av v'ein, because the father is also a threat. Because he's acting as if he's Yosef's father and not our father. Same thing, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give us Musar, right? Ani Hashem. You totally distorted sometimes my relationship to you, who I was, what my intentions are, and because of that you embarrassed many mitzvahs and you were derelict in Torah. So that's the Musar. Okay. We're going to commemorate fast on Asar B'Teves on Sunday. And Asar B'Teves is the beginning, the foundation of the whole process of destruction of the temples, both of them, because it was the first thing that happened that set in motion the destruction of the first temple and eventually destruction of the second temple. So one process. What had the process start? A siege. The Babylonians came and sieged Jerusalem on the 10th day of Teves. And that was the beginning of the end. First the siege, then months later in Tammuz, they broke through the walls, and then on Tisha B'Av they destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, and then after that they killed Gedaliah, what's it called, and saw to it that the Jews left Eretz Israel and went into physical exile in Chutz Laretz. Because up until Gedaliah was killed, even after the destruction of the temple, most Jews still lived in Eretz Israel under this vassal of Babylonia called Gedaliah. When Gedaliah was killed, the people realized that they can't stay in Eretz Israel anymore, and eventually they left. So the first temple was destroyed, then 70 years in Babel, they came back, they didn't learn the lesson, and the second temple was destroyed. So all the tragedies started with the siege on Yerushalayim in the time of the Babylonians. Okay. Now there's an interesting thing about Asar B'Teves, and that is that all other fast days, except for Yom Kippur, if it fall on Shabbos, you don't fast on Shabbos. You push it either the next day, like if Asar B'Teves, if Tisha B'Av falls on Shabbos, you fast on Sunday. Shavuot B'Tamuz falls on Shabbos, you fast on Sunday. Okay, if Tainus Esther falls on Shabbos, if Purim is on Sunday, right, so Tainus Esther would be on Shabbos, so you fast on Thursday. So either you push it ahead sometimes, and what the considerations are is not for now. Sometimes you push it ahead, like Titus Esther, and sometimes you do it afterwards, like Tisha B'Av, Shivasar B'Tammuz, Tzom Gedaliah. Okay. Asar B'Teves can never fall on Shabbos, according to the calendar we have. According to the set calendar, it's impossible for Asar B'Teves to fall on Shabbos. It can fall on Friday. And, however, the Rokeach says that if Asar B'Teves would fall on Shabbos, in a time when they didn't have a set calendar, and they made Rosh Chodesh according to the sighting of the moon, it was possible for Asar B'Teves to fall on Shabbos. If it could fall on Shabbos, you'd have to fast on Shabbos. And therefore, if it falls on Friday, we fast on Friday, and we don't make it earlier on Thursday or whatever. We fast on Friday till Shabbos. It happens many times. Why? Why? Because in the Navi, it says, Be'etzem hayom hazeh, in the midst of this day, the siege began. It's the same terminology that's used by Yom Kippur. Be'etzem hayom hazeh. Whoever does not afflict himself, Be'etzem hayom hazeh, gets koresh. So since on Yom Kippur it says, Be'etzem hayom hazeh, we know that even if it falls on Shabbos, you fast. The exception to the rule. And therefore, since it uses the same terminology by Asar B'Teves, if Asar B'Teves would fall on Shabbos, you'd have to fast on Shabbos too. Why? Why is Asar B'Teves so different than the other fast days? I was thinking, the other fast days, on what happened on that day was a tragedy. The Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. The walls of Yerushalayim were breached. There was an actual tzara. There was a tragedy, a calamity that happened. Gedaliah was killed. Okay? The tragedy happened. It was for the good. Eventually, everything the Rabbanu Shem does is for the good. But at that moment, it was a tragedy. There was a calamity that occurred. Okay. On Asar B'Teves, what happened with the siege? The idea is like this. When the Jewish people don't know their own identity, and we try to be other people, and we're not happy with being in Yerushalayim, where we're supposed to be, in Eretz Yisrael, and we want to be in all the rest of the world, and we want to be like the nations of the world. So the Reb Chaim Volozhiner says, when the Jew doesn't make Kiddush, the Goy makes Havdalah. When we don't know how to separate ourselves from the nations of the world and understand what our mission is, that we're different, that we have a different mission. They're fine people, they could be moral, righteous, they can get a share in the world to come. But we have a different mission. We have to be a holy nation. We have to be God's representatives. They don't have to. They have to keep seven mitzvahs. So if we don't sanctify ourselves and recognize what our identity is, who we really are, and we try to be like everybody else, then the Rabbanu Shem sends Goyim to surround us and to keep us in Yerushalayim and to make us think that, you know what, maybe we don't, we have an identity of our own. And sometimes from the Havdalah that the Goyim make, where they separate us, right, we learn to know what kind of Kiddush we should have made. So if the Goy doesn't make Kiddush, if the Jew doesn't make Kiddush, the Goy makes Havdalah. He separates us. So what happened on Asar B'Teves? There was a separation. Jews were separated, they were confined, and the Goyim were out there, and the two can't mix. They won't let anybody in, nobody can come out. So it wasn't really a calamity or a tragedy. Nothing happened. Nobody was hurt. Nobody was, was destroyed. Everything was maintained. But what happened? It was clarified. These are the Goyim. These are the Jews. Nobody comes. There's no, connection anymore. Right? They're surrounding you. And now that gives us an idea of who our identity is. When you don't understand who you are and who the Ribbono Shel Olam is, then comes all the distortions and all the destructions or whatever. So Asar B'Teves was to do the same thing that Yosef told his brothers. I'm Yosef. You saw me in a totally distorted way. Now see me as I really am. Yidden saw the Ribbono Shel Olam and their relationship to the Ribbono Shel Olam and themselves in a totally distorted way because of their kina and taiva and kovet, because of all these desires they had to be like everybody else. And to be out there in the big world and not in Eretz Yisrael. So the Rabbanu Shem sent Goyim on the 10th day of the 10th month. 10 is a number of Kedusha. It's the Kedusha of Kedusha to emphasize who we are. So we should make Kiddush. that we should be separated from the nations of the world and know our own identity. And then we'll be able to see things and see the Ribbono Shel Olam in the proper light, because we'll know who we are. But if you don't know your relationship with God and you distort your own identity, then inevitably you're going to end up doing things that are terrible. So therefore, on a Sarva Teves, it wasn't that there was a calamity, but in the end it'll be for the good. There was no calamity. It was like Yom Kippur. The purpose of fasting on Yom Kippur is not negative for the sake of a positive, it is the kapara that you do on Shabbos too. Therefore, the Asar B'Teves, what happened then, what we fast for, is not a calamity that can turn out for the good. It was itself good. It was itself a kapara, it's an atonement. It was a lesson that we should have learned. We didn't. So therefore, you can fast on Shabbos too. Because it's just like Yom Kippur. It's Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. It's not a calamity for the sake of good later. It's a tshuva process. It's a kapara. It's an atonement process. That's okay on Shabbos too.
Can it fall on Shabbos?
Well, it can't, according to the set calendar. But it could when they still in the second Beis Hamikdash, right? There were times that could be that they fasted on Asar, but and it could fall on Shabbos then.
But Yom Kippur
can't. Right. Yom Kippur can fall on Shabbos, yeah.
The 10th day of the 10th month.
Right.
Isn't
why?
That 10th month. How
so
do you work that out?
Nisan is the first month. Right. Months go from Nisan. Years start from Tishrei. But the months, Tishrei is the 7th month. So Cheshvan is the 8th, Tishrei is the 9th, Teves is the 10th. 10th of the 10th. Okay, just another idea. There are four of Asar B'Teves and why it stopped on Shabbos. Different idea. There are four aspects of Golus. Golus has four negatives to it. What its essence is. One is that we are not independent. We are subjugated to the nations of the world. One aspect. Second aspect, we are vulnerable because we're amongst the nations of the world. We're vulnerable to their pogroms and we're in danger. Whereas being in Eretz Yisrael, in our own environment, we can protect ourselves better. Here we're scattered amongst the nations of the world. We're vulnerable to their wiles and persecution. Third thing is we don't have a Beis Hamikdash. And the fourth thing is that we are taka not in Eretz Yisrael, we're scattered amongst the nations of the world. Those are the four things of Golus. Subjugation to the nations of the world, being vulnerable to them, being out of Eretz Yisrael, and not having a Beis Hamikdash. If you think about it, the four fast days, each one represents a different aspect. Asar B'Teves represents subjugation to the nations of the world because we weren't free anymore to move. They limited our, with a siege, they limited our movement. We subjugated to them. The breaking in of Yerushalayim means we were vulnerable to their hordes, to their the dangers of being exposed and vulnerable to the nations of the world. The Beis Hamikdash was destroyed on Tisha B'Av, that's that aspect. And the Jewish people were dispersed amongst the nations of the world on Tzom Gedalia. Now if you think about it, three of the four didn't actually happen on that day, the day that it was. Just it was precipitated on that day. For instance, when they broke through the walls of Yerushalayim, the dangers of the Goyim didn't actually happen. Just that the potential existed once they came into the walls. But that they actually persecuted us or whatever, not necessarily the case. It's just that at that point, when they broke through the walls, it precipitated that danger from then on. When the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, it wasn't really destroyed on the ninth day of Av. The fire started on the ninth day, but it wasn't actually burned till the tenth day. But it was precipitated on that day. But it didn't actually happen on that day. Gedalia also, when they killed Gedalia, at that moment, all Jews didn't leave Eretz Israel. It precipitated an exodus from Eretz Israel over the next months, years, whatever it took. But it was precipitated by that occurrence. So the day itself is not that significant. Because the calamity didn't happen actually on the day. Just that thing precipitated the calamity of that aspect of Golus. But when the Goyim made a siege on Yerushalayim, on that moment, we lost our independence. So it wasn't something that was precipitated. It's something that actually happened on that day, the loss of our independence. So therefore, if all the other days fall on Shabbos, since the day itself is not significant, it only precipitated for the future these things, you don't have to fast on that day, so you fast the next day. But here, the calamity was what happened on that day. Therefore, it's Be'etzem HaYom HaZeh. Therefore, it falls on Shabbos. The day itself is significant. It's not just a beginning of a process. It created that calamity of Golus itself. That's why it's different than the other three.